Alti, the online portal for institutional investors in Germany, Austria and Switzerland.
Today's Alti interview is about the next level of ETF business. We discuss the question, how could fixed income look like if we would start from a blank slate? This is the slogan of Tabula. We speak with Michael John Lytle. You are the CEO of Tabula, an ETF provider focused on fixed income for European institutional investors. I welcome Michael John, or in short, MJ. Thank you for joining us in the virtual studio.
My pleasure. Nice to meet you, Christian.
MJ, please tell us about yourself.
So, my name is Michael John Lytle. I am CEO of Tabula. I've been in the financial markets for around 30 years. I spent 18 years at Morgan Stanley, mainly in fixed income, covering a variety of different aspects of the fixed income business, both new issue origination, distribution, electronic trading, multi-asset class structured products, all of the different aspects of how to make a fixed income business more efficient and more powerful. At the end of my time at Morgan Stanley, I was involved in setting up an ETF issuer called Source, which was a joint venture between Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs. We went on to add three more investment banks, JP Morgan, Merrill Lynch, and Nomura, as shareholders. We were an independent asset manager, but we worked with the banks, taking advantage of the trading and sales capabilities of the banks and the fact that the ETF space is an intersection between the asset management business and investment banking, partially because the funds are run as obviously as UCITS funds, but they're distributed on a secondary basis. And that is incredibly important to the momentum of the ETF business. Since setting up Source, we sold it to Invesco. It's now Invesco's ETF business. And I've gone on to found this business, Tabula, which is focused on passive fixed income, particularly in an ETF wrapper.
What is the story behind Tabula?
So the story behind Tabula is that over 20 years, the equity markets have moved from a focus on active management to a focus on passive. They've shifted to about 20-30% of assets are being managed passively. That shift has not happened yet in fixed income. We're perhaps at about 5% passive. There are meaningful challenges to creating passive instruments in the fixed income space. I put into broadly three buckets. One is that the fixed income space is heterogeneous. In other words, it isn't homogeneous. It's not all one thing. There are lots of different sub-asset classes, whether it's government bonds, credit, high yield, investment grade, emerging markets, all very different from each other. Two, that each of these asset classes has a very large number of securities. Rather than a few thousand, there are hundreds of thousands of securities in each bucket. And three, that the data in fixed income is nowhere near as robust as in equities, simply because there are so many securities and it's an OTC market. So it's much harder to get prices on securities or to find liquidity in the vast majority of securities. Those are the obstacles. On the flip side, there are some very interesting dynamics in the fixed income space. There are risk factors that are available in fixed income that are meaningfully different from the risk factors in equity. And the clients who are moving from the active to the passive, they may be using active managers or they themselves may be active managers. They need more specific tools for targeting what they see as the sources of return. And therefore, the fixed income space needs more precise tools, and we're here to build those.
Let's uncover the story of the slogan. What is the background of, if you started with a blank slate, what would passive fixed income look like?
So it goes back to what I was talking about, that fixed income is a very different asset class from equities, and you need to not assume that we have a very good model in the equity space for how you create passive solutions and wrap them as ETFs. You don't want to just copy what you've done in the equity space into fixed income. Now, there have been some useful products created in fixed income so far, mainly around cash bond baskets, but around the main benchmarks, that investors have, active investors have used over time to guide their investing in fixed income. But there's a lot more that you can do than just using, you know, multi-thousand bond IG benchmarks. So, for example, when you invest in credit, you're specifically investing in the value attributed to the company as separate and distinct from the underlying interest rates in the space. You're trading on spread. So whenever you look at a credit, let's say something like a car company like VW, you look at where VW trades on a spread to German government bonds, for example. That spread is your indication of what you're getting paid for the risk of being long the default potential within VW. Isolating that factor, that credit factor, is what a fixed income investor wants to do. Now, CDS indices and individual single name instruments have been used for years in order to identify and trade that spread. They're not generally available to the average investor. They're mainly used by much more specialized fixed income investors. But there's real value in being able to capture spread without interest rate exposure. So one of the early things that we did was delivering CDS-based spread products, both on the long side to get you, allow you to get long credit, but also on the short side to allow you to buy protection or, in other words, go short the market, protect yourself from any underlying exposure that you have.
The U.S. elections are over. Biden is the winner. Trump is still in the White House. What are the risks in the U.S., in your opinion?
Well, I mean, generally in the markets, the risks are always through uncertainty. The markets hate uncertainty. They like certainty. The markets, I think, would generally accept negative certainty over more positive uncertainty. So if there's something that might happen, but we don't know if it's going to happen, it might be slightly better that we'd rather have know what's going to happen. I mean, we're facing this with Brexit. We don't know what's going to happen with Brexit, but generally most people would like to know the outcome, whether even if it's not quite what they hope it's going to be. I think we're sort of grinding our way there, obviously, in the U.S. As you said, it's the 25th of November when we're recording this, and we're starting to see a transition from Trump to Biden. Begrudgingly, Mr. President Trump is accepting that he'll be leaving the White House. However, there is an awful lot going on in the marketplace. For the first time in decades, we have a combination of aggressive monetary and fiscal policy. And we've been sitting on stable, very low inflation for a decade and a decade and a half, to the point where most investors really have not worried about inflation for a very long time. I think that it's fair to say that inflation is at least back on the table for people to talk about. I think investors, and we work with an independent research house called Absolute Strategy Research, ASR, which is one of the highest ranked independent research houses in Europe, and they do some surveys of their client base. I think it's fair to say that the range of opinions on where inflation is going have not been wider in a decade and a half. So we have people who think that deflation is still on the table, and we have people who are starting to worry about relatively high rates of inflation, 3%, 4%, 5% plus. That diversity of opinion means that people are looking for tools to be able to hedge and manage potential future inflation exposure. And that in and of itself, the uncertainty and the need for specific tools creates an opportunity to deliver solutions in the inflation space.
We all know that ETFs are pretty liquid by definition. At the height of the crisis this year, we saw many stories about bond ETFs and liquidity. Are you able to explain what really went on?
Yes. Well, I think it's interesting because for people who are not specialists in ETFs, there have been many people who've worried that if there were a significant sell-off in the marketplace, that ETFs might be the place where the market broke. In other words, because ETFs are daily liquidity vehicles, they're heavily traded, that there might be a breakdown between the desire for liquidity and the liquidity that they found in the ETF space. And they specifically focused on fixed income ETFs, saying that, you know, we do have times when fixed income instruments become significantly less liquid, particularly in the credit space. Might that not create a problem in credit ETFs? The reality that we saw in March, and we've seen over the course of the last 6 to 9 months, is that actually ETFs have performed extremely well, particularly fixed income ETFs, through the crisis. And they've actually helped to make the underlying market a little bit more liquid than it would otherwise be. I'll clarify both those points. So one of the ways that you identify issues in daily liquidity vehicles is whether the ETF trades in line with its benchmark. Does it trade at the benchmark level, at a premium, or at a discount? During the crisis, ETFs in the fixed income space had a tendency to trade at a discount. And the question was, did that indicate that the ETFs are not working correctly? The conclusion by a number of academic entities who looked at it, including the BIS, was that actually the ETFs were working perfectly. And what they were highlighting is that because the indices that the ETFs tracked used pricing sources that across a very large number of bonds, actually what happened when you got a disconnect between the NAV of the fund and where it traded was that it highlighted that the pricing sources that were driving the NAVs had actually become stale. And so therefore, the ETFs were a much better indication of where the actual bonds were trading than where the indices were pricing themselves. Secondly, because ETFs are transparent vehicles that are available to market makers on a continuous basis, they're basically a large bucket of fixed income securities with daily liquidity, and they do physical creations and redemptions. And the market makers can see what they would get if they were deemed against an ETF. ETFs actually became a source of liquidity that actually enhanced the liquidity in the underlying bond markets. So if you're a market maker and you don't have the balance sheet to run positions in thousands of different bonds, you could go to a large ETF that actually held those thousands of bonds. They did it without impacting your balance sheet. And you could access those bonds by redeeming shares against that ETF, getting a basket of securities, and then trading those securities if you needed them because you were finding demand for them, which meant that they became an extension of the balance sheet of trading counterparts. So they actually, rather than damaging the liquidity in the markets, they actually helped enhance the liquidity of the underlying bond markets.
We expect solutions against the coronavirus. We expect vaccines that bring us back to what we call the normal. Is this realistic? What if not?
Well, I think the challenge is that the markets are kind of priced for perfection right now, particularly the credit markets. So if we look at where spreads are, they're back to where they were pre the March crisis, basically where they were trading in January and February. On the other hand, of course, the economy is in meaningfully worse shape. We have more debt, and we have more risks in the marketplace. Not all, you know, some of the things that we've talked about, we have to get Brexit done. Perhaps we're starting to put the U.S. election risk behind us. I think there are German elections coming up next year that will raise some questions, may even raise some questions around stability of the European Union. We're priced for perfection, and there are downside risks. Coronavirus, you know, we talk about the fact that we're back into sort of a second wave. We're having lockdowns again. We're in the winter, which for the Northern Hemisphere is the worst time, worse than the summer generally for infections of various viruses. Sure, we've got vaccines coming, but it's very clear that we're not going to be able to vaccinate the whole population. The governments are going to have to focus on vaccinating people who are vulnerable as well as healthcare workers. Will it create a fire break against the most damaging outbreaks that get at the health, the strength of the health service? Yes. Will it solve all the problems and the risks in the marketplace? Probably not. I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know much more than anybody else who's on this call. What I do know is that uncertainty is not the friend of the marketplace, and there's still lots of room. There is lots of uncertainty and lots of room for further uncertainty to come along. You know, what our job is as a fund provider in the passive space is we don't make calls. We don't tell people you should be long this and short that. We simply supply them with tools so that as their asset allocation committees come to conclusions as to where they want to be long, flat, and short, that they actually have tools for doing that. As I've highlighted before, I think in the fixed income space, that toolkit has been quite limited until recently. We're very focused on adding to that toolkit. If you want to use an analogy, if there are only a bunch of screwdrivers in the toolkit today, we're trying to add spanners, hammers, drills, other stuff that allow people to do a wider range of reconfiguration.
What do you expect in the next 3 to 5 years in your business?
Well, I think in the asset management business, it's very clear. The inflows into the passive space continue to grow. I think that those inflows will be very focused, I hope and believe, on the new economy. So what some people refer to as ESG products, but basically investment that helps support the move of the world to more sustainable forms of business, whether that is energy-based, water, food, anything that allows the planet to better support 7+ billion people without destroying itself.
That was Michael John Lytle from Taboola. Thank you for your time, your opinions, and the interview.
Thank you very much, Christian.
Alti.com, the online portal for institutional investors in Germany, Austria, and Switzerland. Alti.com.